All right, everyone. Welcome to the newest episode of the Jay Davis Show. I'm super excited to have Austin Long with us today. He is the CEO and co-founder of U2s. Welcome to the show, Austin.
Thanks for having me, Jay. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. Well, why don't we start off? Do you want to just give people a background bio of kind of how you got to where you are today?
For sure. Yeah. So as you mentioned, currently I'm the CEO and co-founder of U2s. We started in 2019, so we've been in business for a few years now. And prior to that, I was the director of partnerships and managed a lot of the talent relations at Omnia Media, which was the last company I co-founded, which was largely in the creator space. We basically were kind of like a music label for YouTubers and streamers that played video games. So we handled their endorsements, their licensing, basically helped them build up their channels. And then prior to that, I made YouTube videos back in the day as a kid, but that's sort of my journey to date.
Yeah, I love it. Well, what have you kind of seen over the last couple of years? And how did U2s get started? What was that like founding story like?
For sure. Yeah, so it definitely goes back to my days at Omnia, which, as I mentioned, was my last company, where we worked with brands all throughout the years that were asking creators to promote products and promote their businesses. And over time, there's definitely been a huge growth in the, you know, creator economy, with creators wanting to make either their own products, their own businesses, you know, things that feel more special to them. So throughout the years at Omnia, we were approached by a bunch of different companies, but over the years did make, you know, toys and collectible items for creators. And we sort of saw, you know, what went right, what went wrong, you know, where you can improve and kind of make a better product, but also something that would speak more to the creators and their fandoms. So after selling Omnia back in 2016, we ended up launching U2s in 2019. And the theory and sort of premise was, let's launch a direct-to-consumer first business that really captures what people love on the internet. So creators, streamers, TV shows, video games, but do it in a way where we're speaking directly to their fans versus, you know, going through retailers, which was the much more traditional path. So we started with that. We had our first launch in, I think it was May or June of 2019, and people really loved it. So we kind of just kept making them. And since then, we've built up a really great roster of partners that have allowed us to collaborate with some of the best brands in the world, some of the best creators in the world. We've worked with people like The Sidemen and Mr. Beast and Markiplier, or IPs like SpongeBob and Stranger Things. So we've just built up a really good community that kind of loves capturing what they see on the internet. And I think it all goes back to, you know, what we saw back in the early days of YouTube, which is fans want stuff that feels special. They want stuff that feels unique, and they want it to kind of, you know, speak directly to them. And we found a unique way to capture that.
Dude, I love it. One of the things I wanted to ask you about, you're in the position where you had exited out of one of your, was that your first startup, you would say, or was?
Yeah. So the way Omnia was basically built was, I had a startup when I was in high school called Square One, where I was managing basically my friends' YouTube channels. They were all online friends. So yeah. I never met them in person, but I was helping them edit their videos. I basically wake up before school in the morning. I would edit their videos, upload it for them. When I would get home at the end of the day, they would give me, you know, recommendations on edits and stuff. And then we would get the video live. And over time, that built up into a cool little business when I was 16. And then when I turned 17, I met a friend who became my co-founder. His name was Tamor. And we basically combined forces. So he was doing a similar thing in the music space to what I was doing in gaming, working with creators. So he essentially bought Square One, and we created Omnia out of that. And then that was how that business launched. And then after about 2.5 years of working on it, you know, I moved to LA through the process. We built up, I think we had like 60 people on our team or so. We ended up getting acquired by Blue Ant, which was like a Canadian traditional media company that wanted to get into the YouTube space.
Dude, that's awesome. So you've been able to get acquired kind of the first time, second time. As you've gone through that process, what was different this time? I think it's something that a lot of entrepreneurs ask, and it's a common topic of conversation, is like, okay, now you've had kind of your dreams come true. You've had this level of success. You've been able to do a lot of cool things. What was different about approaching another idea? Was it stressful? Was it not? Love to hear kind of your thoughts and how other people could approach it.
For sure. Yeah, I would say, I mean, selling a company definitely has its pros and cons. You give up a lot of the freedom and kind of autonomy to operate as you want, but then you also gain a lot. You gain a lot more resources, potentially more opportunities and connections. So there's obviously always pros and cons there. I would say the challenge in launching U2s was that, you know, myself and even the early team that we had no experience in making physical products. So we went from, you know, a business with Omnio where if we wanted to improve something, it might be as simple as pushing an update or sending an email to, oh, if we want to improve something, you know, we might need to change the tooling or we might need to make an entirely new sample. Or, you know, if there's something wrong with the production, we can't just, you know, push an over-the-air update like an app where, you know, we do have to put in a bit more legwork to fix things. So there was that challenge. And then also as the business started to take off from late 2019 into 2020 into 2021, you know, was when COVID was really starting to peak and supply chain and manufacturing had, you know, probably one of the biggest disruptions it's had in the last 50 years. So we went from, you know, not really knowing how to make stuff to trying to make stuff during one of the most difficult times. So there were a lot of challenges in that, but I would say, you know, it was kind of a saving grace because it gave us the opportunity, you know, maybe to make mistakes that might otherwise have been more critical, but there was a bit more forgiveness, I think, from everyone in the world that stuff's going on, you know, it's okay if things are a little slower or delayed. But I think that also gave us, you know, kind of a fresh set of eyes to look at, you know, challenges in manufacturing that, you know, bigger companies in our space know very well. And we were able to come to them with a fresh set of eyes and try to tackle them in a way that maybe others weren't because they were just so, you know, sort of like stuck in their ways. So I think it was kind of a blessing in disguise and that, you know, we had all these challenges that we were able to work through to come out on the other side and just have a much tighter and smoother operation for manufacturing.
I love that. One of the other things I want to ask you about, I think licensing is one of the things. Licensing IP is very interesting and intriguing to almost anyone doing products. Even outsiders, it's kind of like when you talk to a non-entrepreneurial person, they're like, oh, are you going to license like Disney stuff? Or, you know, that's always the question. What have you learned and what would you tell other people who are thinking about that, interested in that? What are some of the mistakes you've made? How can you kind of share some knowledge there?
For sure. I would say, you know, building great relationships is kind of all that matters in licensing. You know, if you do good work and you build a good network and, you know, you do a good job in delivering, word spreads very quickly. And also on the same side, if you don't do a great job, that word spreads quickly too. I would say our biggest learning so far has been you want it all in the contract, especially when it's really big companies, you know, whatever the terms are, anything that's outside of the agreement, you know, you want it all written in there. Because especially if it is one of those bigger studios, you know, there isn't as much forgiveness as you might come to expect if things do go sideways or sell. So I would say covering your bases there is super important. And then also just making sure that you don't bite off, you know, more than you can chew. Like we've definitely had the opportunity to take on very big partnerships. But a lot of the times we've either passed or said, hey, let's revisit in the future because you really only get that one shot to make a good impression with the studios and a lot of the big brands. So making sure that you're ready to tackle those is always good. And, you know, it definitely doesn't deter people if you say, hey, we're not ready for this right now, but we can come back in 6 months. The opportunities are always still going to be there. The brands are always still licensing. So I would say, you know, making sure that you're doing everything above board and having it inside the agreement. And then also, you know, tackling opportunities when the time is right and you have the bandwidth for it is super important.
What's one of like the most amazing or surprising deals you've been able to pull off? Was there one that was like, man, that was kind of a surreal moment?
Oh, I would say, I mean, there's definitely been a lot. Like we've had the opportunity to work with some amazing partners. I would say Netflix is definitely one where, you know, we were trying to get our foot in the door there for ages. And then we finally got our foot in the door with the last season of Stranger Things. And since then, it's just blossomed into an awesome partnership where, you know, Netflix is unique in that most other studios and partners, they have their slate. So they tell you, here's what's coming out the next couple of years. You know, you have a pretty long time to develop. Netflix might have a show that they didn't expect to, you know, trend and do really well. And now they need product for it. And they'll oftentimes tap on companies like ours where we're agile and we can move quickly because some of the bigger companies in the space just can't turn that fast. You know, it's like turning a cruise ship on a dime. It's just not possible. So I would say that was definitely a dream for ours was to work with them and just show them the power that we have. Disney would definitely be another. There's some properties that we haven't announced yet they're working on with them that'll come out next year. But we started small with them with some animated series. Over time, it's grown and we've worked on some bigger properties, like I mentioned, that'll come out soon. So I would say it's it's a lot of the content and shows and games that I remember as a kid. So now having the opportunity to work on those and be in a position where we're, you know, maybe working on stuff that isn't out yet is super cool to kind of see, you know, the behind the scenes process of it.
Yeah, that's amazing. I love what you said about like it taking time. I think that's been one of the surprising things for me as we've talked with big retailers. It's just never like the one meeting and you have to pass this one meeting. And then if you don't, you're screwed. It's the 3-year relationship.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And sometimes it's not even anything on your end. It could just be that, you know, retailers are going through an inventory problem and they need to work through that, or, you know, they just don't have open to buy dollars. So a lot of it is also just being patient and being there when the time is right. And also just being consistent in your follow-ups. We'll have, you know, partners where they might say no, and then we keep revisiting every few months, and then eventually the door opens. So I'd say just being patient with partners, you know, continuing to be persistent is always good. Just being top of mind for them so that when there is that opportunity, they're willing to give you a shot.
Dude, that's awesome. What's next for you guys? Like, what are you thinking about? I think it's a time where a lot of entrepreneurs are stressed or worried about the future. How are you approaching that as a team? How are you kind of planning and strategizing to be nimble and ready for whatever the future is bringing?
For sure. Yeah, we're definitely being efficient with our team. I think one thing we learned early on was that you can't throw people at a problem. So you really have to solve the problems at their core and then hire around, you know, those solutions that you create to scale up. So our focus over the next year or two is really just continuing to tighten up our operations as best we can so that as the world kind of slowly, you know, gets back to whatever the new normal is, we're in a position where we can capitalize on that and scale. And we are in a unique spot where we really support fandoms, and fandoms definitely aren't going anywhere. There's always going to be people that love, you know, different Netflix series, that love new video games, that love new movies. So being able to build great relationships with the brand owners of those, and then being able to build great products for those fandoms will allow us to continue to scale. So a lot of our focus is just continuing to build that foundation and then experimenting. We're often trying new product lines, new ideas, maybe working with a category of content that we haven't tried before, or, you know, a video game genre that we haven't tried before. So experimenting is definitely really in our DNA. And as we do experiment, we'll throw stuff at the wall. And if it sticks, we'll focus more energy on it, scale it up. And if it doesn't, you know, at least we tried and now we know better for the future.
Do you have a process as you go through experimentation? I think that's another thing that a lot of entrepreneurs struggle with, is it's like, how do you kind of keep that core where you're making most of your money while at the same time not getting too far over on that one side? And then there's the opposite side of like trying 50 new things a month and never making money. How do you balance that? And what are some of the things you've seen that work?
Of course. Yeah. So I definitely agree with that. Our core focus is always on delivering what we have in front of us, which is what's already working. So like vinyl figures and plush is our two core product lines. We're always going to be focused on those. It's our bread and butter. That's not changing. We usually just try to have one new product or one new line that we're working on that releases each quarter. That way we're not sort of sacrificing our time and energy for something that might pan out versus what's already working. So typically it's like each quarter, let's come up with one thing that's new. Let's try it out, but let's cap it there. Let's not, you know, divert all the resources in that direction. So you'll find like in Q3 this year, we're going to be launching some gummies, which are kind of inspired by like Scooby-Doo snacks that we all loved when we were kids. In Q4 this year, we'll have another new line that we're launching. So we'll kind of test those out. And then, like I said, when they work, we'll usually build a new team around those so we don't divert existing resources. And if they don't work, you know, at least it was fun. At least we learned something new. And usually there's some sort of, you know, learning lesson from it if it doesn't pan out.
Yeah. No, I think that's great advice. It's easy to kind of go too far in either of those directions and and try and find. I think one of the things that's been hard for me, and I've noticed, is that timelines just start to extend. And so it's finding that, like, okay, now we're talking with retailers, like you said, a lot of them are talking about, here's what's happening in 24, 25, 26, 27. I'm like, when did we go from what's happening tomorrow to what's happening in 4 years? And that's kind of a shift for an entrepreneur. It's not always easy to adapt that way.
Oh, for sure. We're definitely still getting better about planning. I would say if you would have asked me a few years ago, we were planning what's releasing for products next month. Now we are, you know, trying to get better about what's releasing next year, but we're even still only planning maybe 6 to 8 months in advance at any time. So there's definitely still a lot of room, especially for us, to grow with that. But I would say any good business is built off the principles of planning and then executing against the plan. So if you don't have something written down that you're looking at that you can measure yourself against, it's hard to look back and say, did we do better than we expected? Did we do worse than we expected? You know, you do have to have something written down that you're kind of working against. So I would definitely agree with that.
Yeah, that's awesome. What's like your biggest fandom? Like what's the thing that you would just lose your mind if you guys did something with or worked with?
Oh, I would say a lot of our team loves obviously the classics that Nintendo has brought to life, not only through like new content they have, but old, but they're definitely one of those kind of, I would say, dream brands for a lot of people where it's very hard to get your foot in the door. And then if you do, it hopefully becomes a great relationship. But that's definitely one where hopefully someday. And then I would say a personal fan favorite of mine, I grew up on watching The Office. I still watch The Office. I've probably rewatched it 100 times at this point. And we would definitely love to make some of the memes and different moments from that series. That's an NBC Universal license. But I would say we thankfully have been able to get a lot of the top ones that have come to mind. But I would say between those two, that would kind of be a pipe dream for sometime in the future to work on.
Yeah. What's your favorite Office episode?
Favorite Office episode. I don't know if I could just pick one. I mean, I would love like Kevin with the chili is iconic. All the pranks between Dwight and Jim is iconic. You know, there's all the memes like when Michael comes out of his office and he's like, calm down, everybody. Like there's those, you know, we make a very dynamic product. So capturing those that really brings out the emotion of those scenes, I think is fun. But even some of the moments of like Creed throughout the seasons, like I think there's just so much you can do there between all the seasons. And they recently released like bonus content, I think, on their streaming service. So I still have to watch all those. And maybe there's even more moments that I haven't seen yet.
I'm sure. It's one of those shows that you can just keep going back to. Mm-hmm. I always feel like Benihana Christmas is like, for me, one of the top that I just always am like, you can quote it forever. And it's just so funny.
Oh, yeah. That's great. And even Dwight, when he starts the fire, like that's a great one, too. Or the CPR episode. Maybe that's one of my favorites where he like puts the mask over his face that he cuts out from the CPR dummy. It's a great show.
Dude, it's so great. Is it sometimes surreal to kind of be working with stuff like that, like having these conversations? Do you have kind of the pinch me moments still where it's crazy to just consider where you're at?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Even with, I mean, creators, we are into the same thing, or even sometimes we'll have brands or people reach out to us and say, hey, I saw you, you know, here or there, and we would love to do something. And it'll be, you know, random out of the blue stuff that you wouldn't expect. So we definitely still have those moments. And it is surreal when, you know, we meet with someone and they're like, oh, I saw you in this retail store, or, you know, my brother like loves collecting your products or whatever it is. It's cool to see kind of the expansion of the brand and how wide it's gotten. And I think with us being inside for so long during COVID, and even now, you know, just kind of getting back out into the real world, it's cool to have those connections in real life where, you know, the brand does mean a lot to people physically that we don't necessarily get to see all the time behind a computer screen.
Yeah, dude, that's awesome. What's your some of your tech stack? Like if someone comes to you and says, hey, what are the things you have to have, key components to your success? What are some of those things?
Yeah, I mean, we're pretty basic. We sit on top of Shopify. So all of our direct-to-consumer sales sit on top of Shopify. In terms of like CRMs and softwares, we use Airtable for a lot of our like inventory management or just anything that's more on the analytical side of the business. Basecamp is what we use for project management. You know, it does the job. There's obviously a lot of project management tools, but for us, it works best kind of with the flow of things. And then Slack, you know, our entire team is on Slack. And then a lot of partners, especially content creators, are on Discord. So we keep it pretty basic. I mean, that's pretty much all we use outside of, you know, like email and stuff like that. But we try to keep it refined and try to avoid using too many softwares because you can definitely get lost in, you know, the complexity of just having too much in front of you.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think a lot of those are just whatever the team will actually use is the best tool.
Oh, for
it's
sure.
It's not always the newest tool. What's your guys' marketing funnel look like? Are you guys doing a lot on D2C still? Has that changed as you've gone more into retail? What does that look like?
Yeah, so we're still primarily direct to consumer. Like that still definitely represents the majority of our sales. And then the retail side would be mostly specialty stores. So your FYEs, cool. Your Hot Topics, your GameStops. And then we also sell a bit on Amazon too. But online is definitely where we shine the most because most of the time we're trying to release products on a pre-order basis in real time. So a new movie comes out, a new game comes out, you know, a creator has a subscriber milestone. We're trying to capture those in the moment versus kind of hitting them at a later period. And I would say we find that from a marketing perspective, a lot of it's organic. We have a very visual product. So just making content around it typically gets a lot of eyeballs. But we do paid across the Facebook ad network, with Instagram, across TikTok's ad network, a little bit on Google and Twitter too. But I would say Facebook and TikTok are definitely kind of best for our type of product. And then we also do, you know, creator unboxings or like your traditional influencer style videos. But it definitely makes up a smaller portion of our sales just because of, you know, how visual our product is and how just making that organic content can be so shareable for people in order to get them to our site. And thankfully, we've had a pretty good start to this year. We're definitely up year over year. I know a lot of companies in direct-to-consumer space, whether it's because of CPA costs going up or just changes in the market, have had different, you know, struggles here or there. But I would say, thankfully, we're in a unique spot, like I said, where we support fandoms and those haven't really changed year over year. It might be different fandoms than last year, but they're still around. So thankfully, we've been able to keep growing, you know, even though from a macro level, I'm sure, you know, others might not be in the same boat.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's always great to see. As you've done TikTok, any advice or tips? I think that's one of the places that a lot of people are still trying to figure out.
Yeah, for us, it's just about making the most, I would say, like funny and engaging content that we think people will like. So we would consider it kind of like lowbrow. It's not high production quality. We're not in a crazy studio. You know, it's just shooting in front of a light box or making a quick animation. But I would say, you know, making stuff that you yourself love, because it definitely comes through in the videos. If it feels forced, people are going to see that. And then doubling down when stuff works. Like if we find that a certain, you know, visual way of representing a product works, or a certain audio works, or, you know, a certain transition works, we'll double down on that until we think that people don't like it anymore. And then just looking at the comments and seeing what else people want to see. And a lot of the times our ideas will come from people asking for something, or, you know, they said, oh, it'd be cool if you did this, and then we'll do that. And they see kind of that, you know, engagement cycle. So I would say that's kind of what we found does best on TikTok.
Just get going and start doing stuff. I think that's great advice. No, that's awesome. Well, anything that the listeners can do, what's kind of your call to action? Where can they learn more about what you guys sell and do?
Oh yeah, we'd definitely love for people to check out youtubes.com. That's where we have all our new releases. You know, check out our TikTok especially, see if there's any videos that people love. And yeah, just keep along with the journey. We're still relatively new. We've only been around a few years. So hopefully we can catch up in a couple of years and maybe have, you know, some cool updates to share on how we're doing.
Love it. Well, thanks again for coming. Hang around for a sec. I have something for you, and appreciate you coming and sharing your wisdom with us.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you for having me, Jay.
Awesome. Thanks, Austin.